time for Hyper Nonsense. As live as they want to be from California, here's Sean and Jen.
160 kilobit per second VBR. That's where we're going. Fully uncompressed 24-bit sound designer files. Coming soon. You're gonna love it on your mobile data plans. Welcome to Hyper Nonsense. It is the podcast that comes to you straight from the heart of California. You may notice the lack of a second voice tonight. I am so sorry. Jen is off in Nappy Boo's land, and I didn't think we'd really get a show out for this week, which is sort of last week now. And then I thought, you know what, I'm just going to throw one together here for the fans, the loyal listeners. We love you all. Thank you for listening. Now, in the ultimate test of our audio equipment and its amazing fidelity features, I am actually recording this while the dryer is running mere feet behind me. So this will be a test. Now, I did a little bit of a test just to see if I could notice that it was really hearable. And I didn't notice it, so I guess we'll see if anybody complains. But I think it's going to be okay. Thanks to our fine preamp with downward expander feature. Now here's a tip for everybody. If you want to get into the audio production biz, learn about the downward expander. It will elevate your game by many folds of audioing. And that's all I'm going to say. So what's going on? We got to talk about some stuff. So one thing that I'm struggling with right now is, as many people who listen to this know, I'm fat. And I've been fat for as long as I've been making pods, because I've been fat my whole life. Now, I'm lesser fat than I was when Hyper Nonsense originally debuted, back in the halcyon days of '06. Now I think some of the dryer noise is coming through. Anyway, back in the halcyon days. So I'm lighter now than I used to be. Really, what happened was around 09-ish, I lost about 35 pounds. I went from 260 to 225. You know, it was a gradual thing. I didn't do anything too crazy, just usual stuff, you know, cutting back on the calories, getting some exercise, all that kind of stuff. And over the course of time since then, I've gained about 10 of those pounds back. And I've kind of been in this vacillation period between 230, 235 pounds. Can't really seem to break it. And I've tried a number of times with, you know, these tools, apps that we have that do the calorie counting and the exercise tracking and all that. And, you know, occasionally I do well for a little while and then I don't. I get discouraged and I kind of give up. And I know that a lot of this has to do with my own issues, for which there are so many. But I also think that at a fundamental level, this whole idea of, you know, calories in, calories out, is a little broken because it's focusing on one aspect of the whole equation. You know, it's not really a full overview of your fitness. So, at the end of 2013, I bought a Fitbit Flex. That's the bracelet version of Fitbit. And, you know, I wore it pretty religiously, pretty much every day, you know, tracked all my steps. And that's convenient because before I would use things like the Runkeeper app when I'd go for a walk. And, you know, it would log everything, and then I'd be able to take that and, you know, plug it into whatever fitness app I was using. But the nice thing about Fitbit is it's just there. You're wearing it. You don't think about it. It logs all your movement. Hooray. And I don't know. I've gotten discouraged with that as well. I'm kind of at the point now where I look at the Fitbit and I go, eh, this isn't doing anything for me. And again, I don't know if it's me, but I've been tracking food for so long, and I'm so just kind of versed in, like, the calories of things that I kind of know what, you know, how much calories almost everything is. And one of the nice things about using one of these calorie counting apps is when you first start doing that, it really opens your eyes, and you kind of go, wow, you know, this thing that I've been eating for years, I had no idea that it was 3,000 calories or whatever. And I mean, getting back to this sort of calories in, out thing, it's like, okay, you want to lose weight. You know, a lot of times these apps, I'll go on there and I'll put in my weight, my height, my age, and it'll ask me how much weight you want to lose. And they generally try to keep it at no more than 2 pounds a week, because really more than that is probably unhealthy unless you're talking extreme circumstances. And usually I'll put in a pound or a pound and a half. And it'll tell me, like, okay, if I stay under, you know, 21 to 2300 calories net a day, I'll make my goal. And I can tell you that I can easily do 2100 calories a day, no problem. And I don't mean that in the sense of, yeah, man, I can kill 2100 calories in a meal. I mean, I can. I have. But I just mean that I know from my own experience that even at around 2000 calories a day net, and I'm talking about either just what I've eaten or what I've eaten minus any kind of exercise level, even around 2000 calories a day, I don't lose weight. I don't put any on, per se. But I don't lose it. I mean, thankfully for me, once I got down to, you know, into the 230s, my body kind of decided, this is good. We don't need to go back up to 260 again. And I don't think, I mean, I'm not eating. I mean, I went through a really bad period with food. Let's just leave it at that. I mean, I was definitely eating way more than any person needed to. But, you know, at this point, my body has kind of decided it wants to top out at about 235. And I think to even get up to 240 again, I'd really have to go insane with food to the point where it would be probably physically painful. But, you know, it still sucks. I mean, I feel like I should lose weight. I'm not one of these people that, you know, I'm not influenced by things outside of me. I just know that I'm heavier than I need to be, and if I were lighter, it'd be better on my health, and I ain't getting any younger. Now, I don't know what's going on with me, you know, internally. I know that my metabolism sucks, and that's just due to genetics partially, but it's also due to just a lifetime of bad, you know, eating and kind of exercise habits. So I would probably benefit from some kind of real detox cycle, you know, 30 days of like no processed anything, no sugar, no anything that looks like sugar. And I definitely don't do that kind of stuff as much as I used to. But I'm not completely away from any of it. So I've been looking at other options. And, you know, I started using the Lose It app again at the beginning of this year. I've used MyFitnessPal in the past. I remember before smart phone apps were a thing. I used a site called FitDay. Again, it's all the same stuff. You put in how much you ate, you subtract your exercise, you come up with a net thing for the day. And then if you stay under a certain level, the idea is you're going to lose weight. Now, it might be worthwhile for me, before I just completely take my Fitbit and toss it in the creek, along with, you know, all of everyone else's weight loss gadgets of the past, the Bowflexes, if you will, the belts. Remember those? You put the belts on, and they would vibrate over your torso, and that would somehow approximate exercise while you sat there and, you know, ate chips and watched TV. Well, I think what I've decided, because I was looking up these things, right? And there is one of these apps that I'm really intrigued by called My Net Diary. But what sucks is I'd have to buy the $10 iPad app. And then to really get the full help from the whole app, the whole MyNet Diary experience, I'd have to buy into a monthly subscription, which is going to cost, you know, $60 a year. So I'm looking at $70 in order to buy into it. I've been following this blog for a long time called Nerd Fitness. And I really like a lot of the stuff that they write. I think it's a good blog. And they have a program you can buy into. For if you buy into it all at once, it'll cost you about $83. And it's one-time fee over life. And they have a whole program. You know, it's a 360-degree thing. They give you food and diet suggestions, recipes, exercises, and all the information is there. It has a support community, you know, the people that run the program and then people that are in it. And I almost feel like if I'm going to spend what's roughly the same amount of money, that might actually be a better investment. Now, the other thing is, you know, I ain't rich. I ain't got a lot of money to throw around for this kind of stuff. And part of me, because I guess I'm stubborn, or I'm egotistical. Sure, all those things. I feel like I should be able to hack something together that'll work for me just through trial and error, you know? I'm a DIY kind of person. If I need to do something, I'm going to see if I can figure it out on my own first before I spend money. At least just so I can feel like I didn't just go, here's something to throw money after. So I don't know. But I mean, I feel like I've tried it enough. I've tried it enough with the Fitbit and the other apps. Nothing's working. And I saw, and I don't think he'll mind me mentioning this, because I think he's stated it publicly. But Nathan, who was a guest on our last show, he started using the Lose It app at the beginning of the year. And, you know, he posted on Facebook that he lost, I don't remember what the exact number was, but it was a decent amount. And that, you know, his goal was to lose a certain amount of weight by his 40th birthday, which is, you know, he and I are roughly the same age. But I did the same thing. I started using Lose It at the beginning of the month, beginning of the year, which is the same thing. And I lost 2 pounds the first 2 weeks, and I got nowhere the second 2 weeks. And it's like, how long am I going to keep doing the same thing and expecting anything to change? I mean, I've got a few years worth of anecdotal evidence here that tells me that counting calories is not going to be the thing for me. My acupuncturist recommended the paleo diet a while ago, and I know that's worked well for her and for some of her patients. And I've done some research on it, and I tried it kind of half-heartedly, and, you know, there's a lot of things that are good about it. I think if you're going to follow sort of a named diet, paleo is a good way to go, if for no other reason than it's got some variety in it, and the approach is very much on Whole Foods. We're beginning to just see the beginnings of kind of the paleo diet industrial complex. I know Jen and I went somewhere recently where we actually saw a pre-made loaf of bread in a freezer that was listed as paleo bread. And, you know, you don't want to fall into these traps where you're just buying branded replacements for actual food you were eating before. That will just cause you more problems, and it'll cost you more money. You know, the paleo thing, to really break it down simply as far as I understand it, is you want to cut out all the processed stuff. So the sugar, sugar is the big one. You want to get away from the white sugar. You can eat some fruits, so it's not as strict as, say, Atkins, where you're just trying to cut out anything that looks like a carb. But a lot of the starches, you want to get rid of those. And, there's alternative things you can do. But, I don't know, I tend to get bogged down by just when you start to go, there's whole portions of food groups you can't eat. And granted, paleo is better than a lot of the others, but I don't know. And I've mentioned this before, but I don't actually know really what's going on with me kind of biochemically. Since I went for so long without any health insurance, I didn't have, any blood work done or anything like that. And as I said on a previous show, I won't be able to get into a doctor until April, so I can't have any of, and I can't have any of that done unless I want to pay for it out of my own pocket, and I don't. So I've got to wait. And, it sucks to say, but I mean, I've believed, just given, genetics and everything in my family, that it really was or is only a matter of time until I'm officially diagnosed with something like diabetes. My dad had it. Other people in my family have had it. So I just kind of felt like, given, the nature of my metabolism and everything else, that it was just a matter of time. And I mean, I don't want it, but I just feel like a long time ago I accepted that one day I'll have it. And I kind of feel like once I finally go through that ringer and get all the tests done, they're going to go, oh yeah, you got it. Congrats. But the reason I bring it up is if I am diabetic or there's some other, metabolic condition that's happening for me right now, then I'm, and I don't know it, then I'm also fighting against that. I don't want to just use the excuse of, I don't know what's going on with me, I can't do anything about it until April, and do nothing. But on the other hand, I'm just frustrated with all this other stuff. Speaking of healthcare, let's talk about this. So, this explanation is for anyone who's listening from outside the United States, or anyone whose life, as far as their medical insurance goes, hasn't really changed or been affected by the recent Affordable Care Act legislation, which fully went into effect at the beginning of 2014. So for those of you who live outside the U.S., understand that our Affordable Care Act, sometimes referred to as Obamacare, is not equivalent to your country's National Health Service. I think that historically it may be a stepping stone to that, or at least I hope it is. I don't know if we have any really staunch conservative or sort of libertarian listeners, because Jen and I don't really fit that mold so well. So I don't know if when, you know, I say things like that, if people are, you know, offended and yelling at their media players. If you are, let us know. But what the Affordable Care Act aims to do is it puts this mandate in place that says everyone has to have some kind of health insurance. And prior to this, health insurance was optional in the sense that if you didn't have health insurance, you didn't have to worry about it unless you got really sick and then you were, you know, screwed. Under this legislation, since everyone has to have health insurance, it's set up so if you don't have insurance through an employer, there's a state, there's either a federal or state exchange. And that's a whole other ball of yarn. But here in California, we have a state exchange. So if you don't have insurance through some other means, you go to the state exchange, put in all your information, including your income, how many people are in your house, all this kind of stuff. And it'll say to you, okay, well, you qualify for a healthcare, depending on all these factors, you may qualify for a healthcare subsidy to buy into a private insurance plan, depending on what's in your area. Now, in the beginning of, well, in the end of 2013, we signed up for a plan and we got a subsidized plan through Blue Shield Insurance. And we did that. And, you know, the premiums were all right. You know, they weren't great. The coverage was okay. It certainly was going to give us some help if one of us had a, you know, catastrophic illness or an accident or something. We didn't really use it much, but we had it. And in the middle of 2014, just due to a few different factors, Covered California, which is our state healthcare exchange, they took us off of that plan, and actually, as it would turn out, Jen was able to qualify because our income situation had changed so much. She was able to qualify for the state-covered insurance. It's called, in California, it's called Medi-Cal. Get it? Now, because I'm legally blind, I qualify for the federal insurance called Medicare. I know this is all incredibly confusing. Stick with it as best you can. So that's where we're at for our insurances. Now, if Jen made more money, then she would qualify for a subsidy on her own. She would still be able to have something like the Blue Shield plan, whatever. And really, up until towards the end of last year, Jen never used her Medi-Cal for anything. She just, you know, she just didn't use it. And she had a couple medical appointments, had some tests done. And then this last week, she had a medical appointment. And she told her new doctor, this is the first time she's seen this doctor, that she needed a refill on her EpiPen because she's allergic to a million things. And it's a good idea for her to have an EpiPen on hand. And well, I don't know if the epinephrine in EpiPens actually well and truly expires, but they have expiration dates on them, so why mess around with it? Now, even when we had the Blue Shield insurance, we still had a copay of well over $100 for that EpiPen every year. And that's what I fully expected would happen this time, because we're, you know, she's on this state insurance. And I was surprised when we went to pick up her EpiPen and they handed it over to her, had her sign a thing on the pin pad. I had my, you know, I had my card out all ready to pay, and she handed it over and said, "Hey, there's no copay. Thanks. Have a good day." And I kind of walked away from that, scratching my head, going, okay. So what they're telling me is, as far as our out-of-pocket expenses, we're actually better off with you being on the state insurance versus having one of the subsidized plans through a private carrier. And none of this makes a damn bit of sense from a rational perspective. I don't mind it, but this is weird, and it made me feel kind of guilty for no good reason. I mean, let's realize, let's understand. I mean, everybody's getting paid, I guess. In this case, Jen's healthcare is being effectively subsidized by the state. And again, you know, if you're a staunch conservative or you know, extremely libertarian, I know this is probably infuriating to you. But I don't know. I can't really complain about it. It's surprising. And the other thing that sucks is, I mean, I would like to hit a point in our lives where we're making more money than this, but then that's going to kick us back into qualifying for a subsidy, and then, you know, this is all going to cost us more money. I mean, this is why it's so weird and kind of fucked in America, because if you're really on the low end, but you're not so low that you're like completely screwed and you're living on the streets, you qualify for a certain amount of help that actually helps you. But then if you get you know, 2% over that threshold, now you're struggling and you don't really see any relief until you become well and truly self-sufficient financially. And, you know, that jump from, I don't know, $30,000 a year to $60,000 a year is generally not that easy to get over if you're just toeing the line. You know, if your household income is $34,000 a year and you can't qualify for anything, and really it's less than that. I mean, it's like probably $28,000 to $30,000 a year, because it's probably all we were ever making. You get stuck in that pocket where you can't get any real help. Everything's more expensive, and you're still who you are. You know, if your household is pulling down $32,000 a year, it isn't like you can just turn around and, you know, increase your income by 30% or more. So this whole thing is just frustrating and ridiculous in its own way, and, you know, I'm also torn about it, because I can't complain about it. I mean, the state we're in, it's saving us money, but I feel like it's not sustainable long term unless we just decide, well, we're gonna kind of hunker down and struggle along like we are and hope that, you know, we don't. I mean, I don't know. It's really weird and bizarre. One more point in this whole, I guess this is the healthcare roundup show for us right now. You know, I was talking earlier about apps and gizmos and doodads. Well, Apple, in its newest iPhones, has this health app. I'm kind of intrigued by it, but I can't use it because I don't own an iPhone. I don't own an iPhone of any kind. And, you know, I've never told this story on the pod, but real quickly, you know, I went from iPhone 3G to 4 to 5, and then a little over a year ago, I became post-cell phone. I went straight to an iPad mini with cellular connectivity, and I ported my iPhone number to Google Voice. And I use the Google Voice and Google Hangouts app to make and receive calls and texts on my iPad. I did that because I wasn't really making many cell phone calls, and I still don't. So paying, you know, $40-$50 a month for a phone, it was dumb. I mean, I was paying a tax, and I managed to get that bill down. I managed to get my iPhone bill down to, I think it was just a smidge under 40 a month, which you can't really do. And that's because before I had an iPhone, I got AT&T to give me this ridiculous rate plan that had like 50 minutes a month in it, and I barely ever went over it. And when I got my first iPhone, they just let me bring the plan over. I had to tack a data plan onto it. And then when, you know, and I had this one, I know just infuriates nerds to no end when I tell the story, but I got into the iPhone game early enough to get that original unlimited data plan. And I looked at my usage, and I was only burning through about 100 megs a month. So when AT&T did its big iPhone plan realignment, and they had a plan for, I think it was $20 a month for 200 megs, I said, give me that. So with those two things together, my iPhone bill was like $39 a month. But I just felt like I was paying a tax in order to carry around an iPhone because I just wasn't making any calls. And at that time, I wasn't really even texting anybody. I'm still mostly not texting anyone. But now I'm intrigued by this health app, and you can only get it by buying into an iPhone. I was kind of thinking, okay, well, maybe, you know, I could port my home phone number over to an iPhone, and that would sort of become my new phone. You know, I've been looking into it. It's like, okay, well, you know, the phones are obviously still expensive. I'd have to have a 6 Plus, of course. So it's like, is all this really worth it? I mean, part of the problem is, you know, I look at my home phone and I'm like, this thing is an anachronism. I just feel like, who has a landline anymore? And I thought, since I might be going back to work for a call center, that I'd be telecommuting, I'd probably need it. But I don't think that's really going to happen. So I'm looking at this bill I got every month on this phone going, do I even need this? I don't know. I've had the number for 10 years. I'd kind of hate to give up the number. So, you know, I could try and port it out to a cell phone, and then it would probably save me some money. And then I'm like, ooh, I could get an iPhone and get the health app. Speaking of Nathan, I've had some email exchanges with him, asking him some questions because he's got access to it. But again, that just feels like buying into another solution that may or may not work. I really think what I've come down to is I need to start just focusing and trying to be consistent. Just set up something and go, okay, you know, if Fitbit wants me to have 10,000 steps a day, which I've done a few times, it's not impossible. But if Fitbit wants me to have 10,000 steps a day and, you know, stay under such and such a calorie limit, you know, really try hard and be consistent with it for 30 days. See if I make any noticeable progress. Or at the least, if I progress in the way that the software suggests. And by that, I mean, if at the end of the 30 days, if I plug in, I want to lose a pound and a half a week, I've actually come close to that. You know, I've lost 5-6 pounds. I think that's what I'm going to do. So stay tuned for that, I guess. And then the other thing is, I kind of go, you know, I think to myself, okay, well, then I'll have an iPad and an iPhone. And I really don't like it when I have things that have any kind of overlap. You know, would I still need an iPad? I probably would. And for me, because I'm legally blind, even the iPhone 6 Plus, which I'm sure if I had stayed with the 5 and I had went out and gotten a 6 Plus, I would feel like I was, like I had conquered the world because the screen would be so much bigger. But I've gone in and looked at the 6 Plus a few times, and now that I'm so used to the iPad mini, which is, you know, huge compared to any phone, I just pick up the 6 Plus and I'm like, this is so small. I can't do this. And, you know, there's things. I mean, this whole setup that I've created with the iPad, well, the one nice thing about it is it doesn't actually cost me anything because I have the 200 megabyte T-Mobile plan for iPads for data, and rarely do I ever go over it, and if I do go over it, then they just don't give me any more data. I mean, it's not that difficult to work out. And, you know, I'm at a point where if I really want to, I can spend $20-$25 and buy more data for the rest of the month. But usually the only times that I've really ever gone over that data plan is when I've been traveling. And, you know, if I go over it, then I just don't care. I don't have any mobile data for a little while. You know, I live with it. It's not a system that I know would work for a lot of people because so many people kind of live and die by their cell phones. But I kind of think, okay, if I had an iPhone and an iPad mini, would I still carry, would I carry both devices around with me everywhere? You know, what kind of overlap is happening there? I think that there's things, you know, like I, you know, the iPad mini right now is my soundboard. There's other things I would use it for. But, you know, for a while I had an iPhone and an iPad 2. And my iPad 2, man, that thing would languish. Like, it would sit for weeks and not get any use. And I don't like that. I don't like having things, especially expensive things, that just sit around and don't get used. That's why I don't hoard guitars. Like, if I've got, you know, right now I've got 3 guitars, which is the lowest amount of guitars I've ever had at one time in my life. And to be honest with you, none of them are getting used, which is sad. I mean, if I was going to be austere in my own, you know, motto here, I should sell them all, or at least one of them. I'm not going to do that. But, you know, we've got 2 Macs sitting on the floor that are doing nothing. And I can't decide what to do. One of them is a MacBook. And I could sell those 2 computers and we could get money that we could really use right now. There's no question. So, and, you know, the other one is a Mac Mini, and I thought maybe I'd bring it in, use it as a, you know, production thing. But, you know, it's been months now, and it's just sitting there. Okay, that's not even true. It's been a month, because the Mac Mini has been replaced by the Apple TV, and the MacBook was replaced by Jen's iMac, so it's been a month for both. But, you know, I don't like to leave things that are barely getting used. And maybe if I had an iPhone and an iPad mini, you know, I would use the iPad mini around the house. I would still take it with me. I mean, the thing that was great about having the iPad, which was a real revelation for me when I got the iPad 2, was it's so handy when you're traveling to have a really dynamic device that isn't very big. And because of my visual limitations, I can't really use laptops at all. But having, you know, that device you can hold in your hand and it's, you know, just a flat surface, you know, it's great. But I don't know. I just feel like then my iPad would get sad because it's like my, you know, it's like my world. It's my everything. It goes everywhere with me. You know, when I listen to Leo Laporte when I go to bed, it's on my iPad. When I get on the bus, I'm listening to pods, making calls, sending texts. It's being my soundboard. You know, it would still be some of those things, but it wouldn't be all those things. And I think it would be sad. And who wants to have sad Apple products? You know? Nobody wants that. Okay, so this is this episode has been a tour of, you know, all of the first world problems I'm facing right now. Send in your tips. Tell me what to do. Tell me what you would do if you were me, because I don't know what to do. All right, I want to finish things out with this fun article that I just found. Dateline, Sun Prairie, Wisconsin. A mayor in Wisconsin has learned a valuable lesson about the city's weather-predicting critter. Don't get too close. Of course, today, I think, is officially Groundhog Day in the U.S., which I think we only do in the U.S., but if you're unfamiliar, it's not just a Bill Murray movie, Groundhog Day, speaking of which, filmed in the wonderful town of Woodstock, Illinois. And I actually worked in the building the summer after they made Groundhog Day. I worked in the building that they used as the exterior for Bill Murray's hotel, the Woodstock Opera House. He actually jumps off of the Woodstock Opera House in one scene. I worked in that building. So anyway, Sun Prairie, Wisconsin. Jimmy, the official groundhog in Sun Prairie, bit the mayor's ear during a Groundhog Day celebration Monday. The groundhog's handler was holding the animal next to Mayor Jonathan Friend's face when it promptly bit down. Friend flinched, but he went on with his declaration that Jimmy had predicted an early spring WISC-TV, get it, WISC-TV, reports the Groundhog Day celebration became even more precarious when Jimmy's handlers, Jerry and Maria Hahn, said the mayor had gotten it wrong and that they would, in fact, receive 6 more weeks of winter. That's why the groundhog bit the guy, because the guy misrepresented the groundhog's prediction. The city later issued a statement saying only the mayor can translate Jimmy's prediction. So, again, to fill you in here, the way this is supposed to work is in February, you know, towns will consult their town groundhog. And if the groundhog sees its shadow, then you're supposed to get 6, I don't know if it's supposed to be 6 more, I guess 6 extra weeks of winter, because winter never ends in February. I don't care how many groundhogs do or don't see their shadow. But if a groundhog doesn't see its shadow, then you're supposed to have, winter is supposed to be 6 weeks shorter. So how any of this has any basis in anything is unclear at best. But anyway, the groundhog bit the mayor. I'm really fascinated by WISC TV, W-I-S-C. I really hope that if they don't now, at some point in the past, WISC TV also had a an FM radio station, you know, a classic rock radio station with those call letters, and they were like, coming up after the break, it's a 40-minute jam-packed block of classic rock on the WISC, Wisconsin's own classic rock. It's kind of sad how classic rock radio and kind of rock radio in general is, you know, all the same everywhere. I kind of remember when we were driving cross-country, moving from Illinois to California. We're driving through, you know, southern Minnesota, just getting whatever we could on the radio. And we picked up a station that was like, Okoboji's Greatest Rock. What? What does that even mean? Well, if you stuck with us this long, thank you so much for listening. And sorry. Sometimes a show is better than no show at all. At least that's the theory this week. We hope you agree. Hypernonsense.com is our website. We'd love to hear from you. And you know what? I didn't check to see if we had any feedback since the last ep. So if there is, we'll cover it on the next show. But no matter what, we do see all your feedback. We do appreciate all of it. And most of the time, we cover it on the show. You can also email us, show@hypernonsense.com. You can follow @hypernonsense on Twitter. If you go to the website, you can also check into our Google Plus community, which I don't even think has 10 members. So, I don't know. I figure I'll give it a strong 6 months, and if our total hasn't crossed over into 10 digits, into 2 digits, that would be more than 10 members, we'd probably just kill it. But, you know, it's a fun place to post stuff about the show in between shows. Live hydration. We got it. Don't forget you can support us, hypernonsense.com/support. You can get links there if you would like to write an iTunes review. We'd really appreciate that, which we'll read on the show as well. Or if you're feeling charitable, you can make a donation through PayPal, Square Cash, or Bitcoin. And you can also join our Patreon if you really love the show. You know, you can sign up for a monthly contribution, $1 or $2 a month. It'll really go a long way. And we'd really appreciate that. You know, it just helps us. It keeps us going. Lets us know that people really care about what we create. And it has some value beyond just the fun Z's we get out of making it. So thanks, everybody. With any luck, we'll be back with you next week. And it won't be just me. So have a wonderful week. And watch out for those groundhog bites. See ya. Recording is a noise in the background. I don't know. That's why I'm recording it, so we can find out if there's noise. If there's noise in the background. Oh, I don't know. I don't know. Will there be noise? We're gonna find out.